When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Jon Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Hi, Monica.
Welcome.
Welcome.
I guess we should just say that if things sound a little different today,
or a lot different.
or a lot different. It's because Monica and I are not recording in the same place today because COVID in Los Angeles is
crazy.
Incredibly, incredibly bad.
Yeah. Right now. So a massive message to all of y'all out there hosting your hype house parties.
Yeah,
stay
exactly.
Stay inside.
I mean, that's not to say that it wasn't bad up until this point. We were just doing our due diligence to stay incredibly safe so we could record in person. And even though we're still doing that, it just feels better to not take any kind of risk.
Yeah. So take it from your two nearest healthcare experts, Jessica and I. Though we are in each other's pod, it's very much right now not 100% safe to be together. So Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Stay safe.
Exactly.
Get the vaccine. Support the USPS. All of that fun stuff.
All of the good shit. So yeah, so we're recording remotely, and we don't have the setups that other huge podcasts do. So things sound a little different, but it's still going to be a great ep, Monica.
Yes, it's going to be a great ep.
So today's episode is being done for Monica's birthday.
Woo!
Happy birthday, Monica!
Thank you. The big 80.
Tell us a little bit about your birth, about your life, about...
So I was born in the year of our Lord, 1968. I'm currently 80 years old. Do the math. This is my big 80. So I'm just really happy to be on this earth. I am excited to witness men and women and people on the moon living full time. Yes. And I'm 30, flirty, and thriving all at the same time. So really, I'm just a being that transcends space, time, and age. And I just want to say to all of my fellow beings out there, age is nothing but a number.
It
ain't nothing but a number, baby. My birthday is December 31st, for those of you who give a shit, and those of you who don't.
Happy New Year. More like happy birthday, Monica.
Yeah, happy New Year. New Year, new me, literally. So yeah, my favorite thing in the world are musicals, and the next best thing is the movie musical, and then worst thing is the filmed musical.
I actually like some of those,
like on Fox. You know how Fox has been like redoing all of these, like,
those ones are all fucking terrible.
They're
but
disgusting.
Like the filmed version of Into the Woods, the filmed version of Company, I think they're all amazing.
I agree,
but that's because they're done by Broadway casts.
Exactly,
they're not done by
Ariana
Carrie Underwood. I was about to say no shade, but like there a lot of shade. Just employ musical theater actors.
Thank you
and good night.
Actors of the stage for stage things. Don't
please
give
it would
us
be really nice.
I would kill myself if I saw Billie Eilish doing Singin' in the Rain Fox Live. Like, please.
Monica, don't put it into the universe or they're going to make it happen.
No, truly no shade to Billie Eilish. She's a very talented young lady. But this is what I'm talking about, guys. Like,
could you maybe like do a little like a Could you give me a portion of Singin' in the Rain as Billie Eilish? Do you think you could do that for me?
I would need like a toaster and like a blender. I would need like my, I would need to gargle every 3 seconds to like make the background noise. And then I would have to sing like, Singin' in the Rain. And there would have to be like a long pause and like just a bunch of drips.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah. So for Monica's birthday, we decided to do a movie musical episode of some of our, I was going to say some of our faves, but I guess they're not necessarily all our faves. It was more choosing things that kind of displayed the evolution of the movie musical, because I find that to be a really interesting thing. Yeah,
so So the movie musical is not for everyone.
No, a lot of people really hate it.
A lot of people really, really hate the movie musical. We are fans, obviously. If this episode is not your cup of tea, that's fine. We have some really incredible episodes coming up in the new year with some pretty major daddies, so you can like, you know, you can come back and I was going to say watch. No one's watching anything. This is the first time that we're recording an episode like via Zoom. So maybe you might watch like a clip or two. if Jessica will let me.
I'm sorry. I didn't know we were recording this. Like I didn't realize we were recording the Zoom aspect of this. So I truly rolled out of bed.
You know, she looks incredible. We're basically wearing the same outfit. We really are. We're both wearing a black shirt. We've both got a single necklace.
A singular chain.
I have like rings on, but I don't know what you have on beyond
that. I have nothing on my fingies today.
But we look the same, so I don't know what the I'm also not wearing makeup. So I don't know what you're talking about. The only reason that I look better.
Yes, but you have such beautiful skin. My skin looks like shit right now.
Enough. I use like glue on my skin. So,
oh my God.
I just like paint paste on it and then like rip it off. And like, that's my exfoliant. I have this $14 ring light from Amazon, which I recommend.
Did you say $14?
$14.
Oh,
from Amazon. Anyway, I would recommend this ring light to all and to all a good night.
That's a great tip. Maybe I'll get one or maybe not. I don't think I care enough.
I think you care.
Honestly, if I got a ring light, I would just use it to take selfies.
Oh my God, that is terrible.
I'm sorry, I'm not shy about the fact that I'm a very vain person.
You are vain, but in a not annoying way.
Well, that's nice.
So I would tell you if you were vain in an annoying way. I definitely would.
That's so sweet of you, Monica.
You're definitely not.
Keeping me humble.
A bit of humble pie. What do you think humble pie actually is? Do you think that
I have no idea?
Would it be like a meat pie? Would it be like a sweet
pie? I would
pie?
Think it's something mediocre to keep you humble.
Maybe like a just like a normal like apple pie, like a store bought.
What's
apple
the
pie?
Most like take it or leave it pie?
Key lime pie.
Apple. No, I love key lime. Fuck you.
I've never had a good piece.
Well, you've never had my key lime pie. It'll change your life.
Okay.
It'll change your whole life. Trust me.
Okay.
Okay, I guess. No, I think humble pie would just have to be like the most fucking whatever pie. Like, I think it would just be apple. That's not to say that apple's not good, but it's not like I'm not gonna jump for apple pie.
No, I'll jump for apple pie. And I think most people would. It's why there's a reason why it's like the most popular pie on earth.
Sure, but I mean, it's nothing special.
I think honestly, you know those pie, those quote unquote pies that you would make in like elementary school, where it was just like the like pie crust from the grocery store and then just a bunch of whipped cream.
Yeah,
that's humble pie.
Because why? Because like a fucking clown is gonna come out from behind the corner and smash it in your face to keep you humble.
Just keep you humble.
We've cracked what humble pie is.
You gotta stay humble this holiday season.
Well, technically, Monica, when this releases, the holiday season is nearly over. Christmas is over. And New Year's is shortly.
Yeah. It comes
It'll
out.
It'll come out the 29th.
Oh, yeah. The New Year's is approaching.
Christmas is over.
Christmas time is over.
Is over.
Happiness is gone. Everything goes back to normal even when you're done.
Oh. I mean, luckily, though, once the holidays are over, people will stop having a fucking excuse to gather and making all of this worse.
You know what? You know what's crazy is, you know those, like, signs that, like, Home Goods or Marshalls or TJ Maxx you can get?
Yes.
That say, like, live, laugh, love, and, like, oh, gather.
Yes, girl.
And, like, gather. And like joyful and like shit like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like those people are gonna run out of business after the pandemic because no one will want to gather.
They'd be like, "Do not gather."
All the Karens,
stay far away.
I know the signs will all get replaced by like, "Stay 6 feet away from me."
Live,
don't stand
laugh,
so
and
close
get the fuck
me.
Out of my house.
Exactly, exactly. Sneeze on me, comma not period.
Was there ever a sign prior that's just said sneeze on me? Is that one of the ones that was really popular yes. at like Home Goods?
Sneeze on me when you're not strong.
Oh, wow. That really, you really brought it home there.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So maybe we should start talking about the movies.
Maybe. Let's start with the creme de la creme. I said that so disgustingly.
Yeah, this is really... You said it like phlegm de la phlegm.
The creme de la creme. The first movie that we've got in our heart-sinal is Singing in the Rain, Baby. Singing in the Rain came out in 1952, the ripe year of our Lord, written by Betty Comden and Adolph Green. Directed and choreographed by Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly. Music by Nacio Herb Brown.
Yep.
Lyrics by Arthur Freed, mostly, but some songs existed prior to the musical, and they're not going to credit every single one. I'm sorry.
That was my note. I'm sorry. There are a lot of songs in this movie that weren't written for it. So
yeah.
And they're all written by different fucking people.
In 1927 Hollywood, Don Lockwood, played by Gene Kelly, and Lena Lamont, played by Gene Hagen, are silent film royalty, babies, royalty. Their success, however, is threatened by the rise of the talkie, because Lena's voice is shrill and off-putting, and dialect coaching isn't helping her. With the help of accompanist Cosmo Brown, played by Donald O'Connor, and aspiring star, baby, star, Kathy Selden, played by a very young Debbie Reynolds, they attempt to salvage their first talkie by turning it into a musicale and dubbing in Casey's.
Casey's beautiful voice.
And dubbing in Kathy's beautiful voice over Lena's, but when Lena finds out that Don and Kathy have fallen in love, she threatens to end Kathy's career and their relationship.
Such drama.
I know.
I fucking love Singing in the Rain.
Who doesn't?
I've seen it before. We're both theater kids, obviously, so like we've seen this shit. But
we've seen it at every like cast party ever.
Exactly. It wasn't until I watched it this time through, though, that like I really, really appreciated it. I mean, to be honest, that's what this podcast is doing for a lot of films for me.
Right.
But this one was like a big one where I was really like, you know, this fucking like it really it's like the gold standard for movie musicals and also at the time for movies in general.
Absolutely.
Like in 1952, this movie was what an incredible movie was supposed to be.
Yes.
And like there's a reason why, even though it is a musical, that it's still within like the top 10 on every list ever. Says like 100 yeah. best movies of all time. It's always in Absolutely. At least the top 10, if not the top 5.
Oh yeah, baby. 100%. I first of all, watching Singing in the Rain this time around for me, I've seen it probably like 50 times, like not an exaggeration. Every play I've ever been in, we watch it at least once. It's kind of like the rules. And I watch it on my own when I'm sick a lot of the times. Like, I'll just like put it on kind of in the background and like let Gene Kelly soothe me and nurse me back to health.
As he does, because is he a daddy?
Oh yeah, baby. Oh
baby.
Yeah. although apparently he's like very meticulous and like pretty hard to work with that way. But I appreciate a meticulous man. But this time around, you know what? Singing in the Rain is a fantastic rom-com. Like, it is a fantastic, fantastic, just like if you took all the music out of it, it is still a very compelling romantic comedy. And I truly, humbly appreciate that about it. Not just that, but it is also saying a lot about Hollywood and kind of like the spirit of Hollywood and like how fake everyone is and how their stories are just fabricated to make them seem a certain way when in reality, like, they come from pretty humble beginnings, or like they try their hardest to like fight their way to the top. And then once they're there, they can fabricate whoever they want to be. Which is a really big theme in this movie. And I appreciate that it's literally like taking a baby dig at Hollywood while still being a big Hollywood movie. I love that.
I mean, other movies have been critiquing Hollywood prior to this, but this movie, it embodies everything that Hollywood was at the time and still is in a lot of ways. And so for it to be a musical movie, comedy, love story that is also incredibly self-aware and making jokes about Hollywood, about actors, like, that was kind of a big deal. Like even like from the very beginning, as soon as you meet Don Lockwood, and because they like interview him on the red carpet and he tells his whole fucking like life story.
There's like a flashback, and he is telling the crowd like, this was my story.
And he's like, I had a lovely, like, cultured childhood with my rich family, blah, blah, blah. But then it's flashing back and he's like this scrappy poor kid who sneaks into movies and,
like I said,
performed for like
beginnings.
Pennies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So like, it's telling you from the very beginning that like everything in Hollywood is fucking fake.
It's all fabricated. It's like worse than fake. It's like meticulously fabricated. Like, even his quote unquote relationship with, is it Lena or Lena? Because I hear it
it's Lena.
Two different ways, even in the movie.
Lena.
Lena, his relationship with Lena is also very fabricated. Like, he very much doesn't think that they're a couple, but he presents both of them as a couple when they're walking out and about, and like the studio obviously like placed them together so that they could generate more interest and therefore more ticket sales and therefore more revenue. So it's all very much fabricated. And like, I love that this movie gives us like a peek behind the silver curtain, because it made me kind of realize what a lot of these actors, directors, producers, like what everyone was kind of going through at the time. Because at the time, no one knew what Hollywood really was. Like, they were building it and they were creating it from the ground up, versus now, like, we can look back on all of that and be like, oh, this was, now we do things this way, or like, this was wrong, blah, blah, blah. They didn't have like a standard then. It kind of was what it was, and they had to just kind of build it from the ground up. So I think like in all of that, like, all of that fabrication in and of itself, like, they're fabricating the idea of Hollywood. Therefore, they are fabricating their own lives. They're fabricating their backstories. They're fabricating their relationships. They're fabricating personas. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of researching like this era in Hollywood, and so much of it was just like meticulously prefabricated, so that when people became quote unquote stars, that was 100% planned. Like, it's not kind of how it is now, where we're in the age of the internet, kind of anyone can be quote unquote discovered, and like anyone can make something that a lot of people really like. That was not the case then, obviously. I really admire what it does.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it also really clearly displays that while Hollywood was a little bit different then, even though like a lot of it still is a facade.
Oh, yeah.
In so many ways. I mean, not quite the same way, because like before, like studios owned actors, like actors were only allowed to work with individual studios.
They were on contract with the studio.
Exactly. And like these people would be, these like up and comers would be trained in dancing and singing and acting so that like when they finally got their movie, they can do anything.
Yeah.
And that's not really how it is anymore. Like fucking, you could pull someone off of the street, put them in their movie, and they could win an Oscar.
Oh, you know? 100%. 100%. It's very much how, I don't know if anyone listens to K-pop, because I don't, but I'm very fascinated by like K-pop in general. Yeah,
it's a lot like that.
It's a lot like that, where they're called like idols. And they train them from like a very young age to sing, dance, act, like the whole fucking shebang. And then they like put them together in various combinations and like test them out with test audiences. And then they like release them as like a hit sensation, as like an overnight success, when in reality they've been like bleeding and training since they were like 10. Like it is crazy.
Yeah, they're entirely manufactured, but at the same time, this movie is telling us that like audiences have the exact same relationship to movies and media as we do now. Yes. Like there's that scene where they're watching, they're at the movie premiere, and there's like a clip of Lena on screen, and they pan into the audience, and one of the girls in the audience is like, she's so refined. I think I'll kill myself.
I know.
you're like, people are doing the same fucking thing now. They're seeing a movie star in a magazine or something, and they're going like, I'm going to starve myself so I look like her. I'm going to do whatever so that I can be that thing.
Absolutely.
And this movie was made 70 years ago. 70, and yet
baby.
We have the same fucking, we will always have the same relationship to these kinds of things.
Absolutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. And I think beyond just like their lives being fabricated and like the relationships that like audiences have to actors on the screen or even just the movies themselves, like while that relationship never changes, another relationship doesn't change, where the stage actor tries to pretend like they are better than a screen actor just because they're doing things like kind of in the moment. And while I grew up in theater and I love theater and I work in theater, I think that that's very real. And that's like very, it's a thing that still happens even now, where like stage actors will be like, I'm a stage actor, and then they're like, but they're also singing it like Johnny Rockets. That's like something that they're doing. And Debbie Reynolds's character Kathy is very much like that, where she's like, I'm a stage actor, like I do real art, this is my art, you're not doing art, you're just saying lines. Like that's her whole that is her whole deal from the very beginning, is she's so fucking annoyed by Gene Kelly's character, because she's like, this motherfucker is just in it for the money, I'm in it for the art. And then they're like quote unquote meet cute, or they're not their meet cute, but they're like second meeting, where he like actually finds out who kind of who she is. She's like she's a chorus dancer. She's like low-key like what like a cherry pie version of a stripper is, basically, for like a corporate party.
Like she pops out of a cake, and she's wearing like a cute little outfit, and she sings that song,
and she what's the song? I don't even know. It's like,
oh, it's the all I do is dream of you the whole night through.
It's so annoying and so like cotton candy. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so, and you just see the look of like, oh fuck, like I have been found out from her face, because she's very much like, again, she's the stage actor who also sings like Johnny Rockets, like who consistently says like, I read Shakespeare, I live and breathe August Wilson, you will never find me in a teen drama film. But their like credits are like CSI New York, and like and like they sing Johnny Rockets. And
they're
on
body
like
on SVU.
Yeah, and they're like, and they're like a, their background on like the new Gossip Girl reboot. Like this is their shit, you know? It's just funny. Like I just find that to be very, very funny, because I just don't see how either one is really better than, like, I really just don't. Like, I don't see how one is better than the other. But for some reason, for whatever reason, the mentality is still there. So I'm just, like, wondering, yeah, like, it's been 70 fucking years. Like, when is this mentality going to end?
I don't think it ever will, because that part I feel like has nothing to do with the industry. It's more just about human nature and, like, always wanting to compare yourself to someone else, or needing to compare yourself to someone else and trying to figure out how you're better than them in some way. And when it comes to acting, it comes in this form of, like, theater, stage versus film, and, you know, and I'm sure in other industries it pops itself up in similar ways. I think, Monica, what do you think is, like, what is it about Singing in the Rain exactly that kind of, like, sets it as almost like a perfect movie,
or like in a way? If not a perfect movie, because honestly, I don't think a perfect movie even ever exists. Because
no, but I'm saying that, like, it's one of the ones that's about as close as you can get.
Yeah, it is a movie that is universally loved and critically acclaimed, mm-hmm, like, across the board. I think the star quality is the fluidity in the story and the fluidity, sure, in how each song and dance, like, it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't, mm-mm, feel crazy. It doesn't feel out of nowhere. Like, how the movie itself is paced and the fluidity in all of its singing and dancing and it all bleeding into the story is so fucking seamless. I think that's a big part of it. I really, really do. And that is a testament to its directors, and it's a testament to its choreographers. Really, like, the two shining things about this film. And again, like, just the fluidity of the film. Like, as you're watching it, you do not for a second question what is happening in the film, because, mm-hmm, they do such an incredible job of, like, tying it up in the little bow for you and then, like, sending you along your merry way. And that is, I think, what makes this film so golden, because I can think of very few other films, specifically even movie musicals, that mm-hmm happens. I really can't think of another one. I really can't.
And I think that this movie being so incredible in a lot of ways is one of the reasons why modern movie musicals get shit on.
Oh, yeah.
Because the culture has shifted so much. Like, movie musicals were successful then in the 50s and 60s. I mean, and prior to that, because musicals were successful, because that is what you did as, like, that's what you did with your free time. You went to the theater. You saw things live. Musicals were kind of loved by everybody, which is why this was such a huge deal. That's not the case anymore, because that's just how Hollywood and society has shifted. I can't tell you why exactly, like, why something else has become popular. And so now we see a movie musical and it feels super, super fabricated. And it feels like it's trying to be something that isn't popular anymore, which is why movie musicals now are either they for the most part suck, or they're, like, decently made, and the people who like them because they're just fun, not because they're technically good movies.
Exactly. They just, like, make them feel good, which is honestly fine. I'm happy with, honestly, as long as the movie or the art or something makes you feel good, mm-hmm, really, then it's done its job, right? It's when, it's really what it is when it's universally hated and everyone is like, mm-hmm, this should have never been made. Cats, then it shouldn't, like, you know what I mean? Like, then it shouldn't exist. And then it's like, why did you waste time and money?
The thing is, like, there's never going to be another Singing in the Rain, because in order for there to be one, all of the culture surrounding musicals and surrounding performers, how performers are trained, what Hollywood goes for, all of that would need to change, because, like, there is no modern day Gene Kelly, because we don't use Gene Kellys anymore.
No,
you know.
However, this is where the conversation is going to get interesting, because do you know what movie could have been another movie that got close to Singing in the Rain?
What?
La La Land.
I was going to say, keyword,
could have. keyword, key phrase, could have been.
I think it could have gotten about as close as you possibly could have gotten.
Because you're never, it's never going to happen. That's the thing, is we're never going to get a singular piece of art that is going to match or live up to Singing in the Rain, because it was kind of the first of its kind. The first, like, beautifully fluid, perfect music movie musical. It's a great film. A lot of people love it. It is great for all audiences. Like, it's not too crazy. It's not too raunchy, but it's not too cookie cutter. It is not too cherry pie. Like, it's somewhere in the middle, and it's seamless. It is just so beautiful, and it's so fun, and it's so brilliant. However, La La Land had the fucking opportunity to do the exact same thing in its own standard, because again, we're never going to get there. But then they cast Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
Well, the thing is like, I think in order for it to have gotten close, they needed to cast musical theater actors, but also, like, quite frankly, society just needs to view movie musicals as something with more potential in order for it to come close.
Oh,
and
exactly.
They need to view the actors who are in them the same way that they view Gene Kelly, the same way that they view Debbie Reynolds. But, like, we don't see them the same way.
No,
and
we see them
we
as
don't
like
see them the same way.
Yeah,
exactly. So, like, it simply, even if the movie was super, super close, it all has to do with audience perception. And the audiences, I don't think, would have perceived it as that.
No. One movie that we're not going to talk about today, and we were going to watch for an episode, but then didn't because I got too weirded out by it, was a movie called Moulin Rouge. And that that movie musical, it was actually, like, really loved by audiences. And it was praised by critics for just, like, how beautiful it was, and, like, the for the songs and for a lot of the choreography. Like, for I say these specific things because it was critiqued for various other reasons too, because it's not a perfect movie by any means. Mr.
No, because
Baz
Luhrmann is
he just, like, throws up on
an
you
acquired
every single
taste.
Time. Like, what he does is he, like, chugs a bunch of glitter and then throws up on you. And that's
exactly.
His films. But that movie had really incredible singers and really incredible performers in it. We love Daddy Ewan. We love our Nicole. Like, it was just, from what I saw of it, I could see why people really gravitated towards it and why they then turned it into a stage musical, because it's it's kind of perfect in that way. I just think, like, movies like that, we're getting close, right? Like, if we start going in that direction a little bit more and start, like, actually giving a shit about who we cast in these films and what and what the premise of the actual story is, like, if we start actually fucking giving a shit about movie musicals, because we don't. No one can sit here and argue to me that we give a shit about movie musicals in this world, because we don't.
We meaning the industry and everything.
Yeah, we meaning the industry.
Yeah.
We don't give a shit about them. The industry doesn't give a shit about them. Therefore, they don't try very hard with them, because they're not, they don't, to Jessica's point, they don't view actors as Gene Kelly's and Debbie Reynolds as the plural for Debbie Reynolds.
And they also don't train them the same way.
No.
Or they don't see someone with Gene Kelly potential on Broadway and say, let me go get that guy and put him in these movies where we're using the skill that he was showing us on Broadway. I don't mean let's take fucking Ben Platt and make him an actor where he doesn't sing or dance.
No.
Let's take
Jeremy Jordan and put him in a literal movie musical, not The Last 5 Years with Anna Kendrick.
Yeah, that wasn't The Last 5 Years released straight to Netflix.
No. Let's take Jeremy Jordan and put him in a Gene Kelly-esque film, because he's an incredible technical dancer. He's an incredible classically trained singer, and he's a phenomenal actor. Let's take him out of Superman, if that's still going on, or Supergirl, or whatever the fuck, and let's put him in, like, a real movie musical, and let's see how that does.
You know, I think maybe the closest that society ever really got to kind of coming back around to this idea was when they fucking made Smash.
Oh, yeah. So I...
not a perfect show, but doing the thing it needed to do.
I'm going to bring this all back to Glee somehow. So So Glee was a TV show by Ryan Murphy, which I think was his magnum opus. Like, I think he never made anything better ever. And the songs in Glee were bad, but the performances were incredible.
Absolutely.
And the storyline was incredible up until like season 4, and then it got so whack. It got so whack, no one watched it. But in the same way that Smash was not given a chance to become what it needed to be, which was like a really great gold standard for like movie, musical, TV, Glee was never given that opportunity either by Ryan Murphy.
Well, but it all just started becoming so commercialized. Like, they brought on Uma Thurman to fucking Smash. Like, no, get her out of there.
Exactly. Both of the things happened to both of the shows, where both of them got way too commercialized. They brought in like people. They started
like
doing
like Paltrow.
Yeah, they brought in like Gwyneth Paltrow. They started doing the weirdest fucking songs. They did like Gangnam Style at one point. No one took them seriously. Like, the same thing happens to these. This is what I think happens. The same kind of thing happens to movie musicals in development, where they go like, it's not commercial enough. It's not going to appeal to a wide enough audience. So we're just not going to give a shit about it. And we're going to slap like a really big name on it. And oh, they can't sing, they can't dance. That's fine. Oh, like the choreo, we'll just, oh, they're movers and not dancers. That's fine. We'll make the choreography so that everyone around them looks incredible and they look like shit. Like, this is what's going to happen. So everything kind of, again, the reason why I'm sort of like rounding this all out is like everything falls under the same umbrella. Like, it gets to the point where Hollywood says, the industry, I guess, says, it's not like mainstream enough. It's not like commercial enough for us to make enough money off of it. Therefore, we're not going to give a shit about it. And that's where its path to getting to something like Singing in the Rain, again, never Singing in the Rain, but like it, it dies. That's where it dies.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, this is really all to say that, like, if you haven't seen Singing in the Rain, you have to watch that fucking movie.
Yes.
People who hate musicals like Singing in the Rain.
Exactly.
Like, it's just, I can't even describe to you how magical it is and how, like, how incredible it is. Like, it feels stupid to sit here and be like, the choreography is so amazing, because like, I can't put into words how incredible it is. And like, the magic that the actors create, like fucking Donald O'Connor he's unbelievable.
Oh my God. Oh my God. So my favorite, number in the movie is, Make 'Em Laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like trying to remember if that's what it's called. Absolutely, that is what it's
called.
Yeah, it's
Make 'Em Laugh.
And
Make 'Em Laugh.
Make 'Em Laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? And then they adopt like an Irish accent. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So that number is my favorite, because it just really goes to show you how much thought goes into making choreography for the screen look like it is on stage. Does that make sense? Because when you are sitting in a Broadway theater, when you are sitting and looking out onto the stage, all you don't see like a bunch of just individual like singers, dancers, actors. You don't see all the individuals kind of like at this like tapping or kind of doing whatever. You see like a wall of sound and dancers, and it is a very like impactful experience. Just recording that, so like just filming something like that, it's not going to resonate for the camera. It's just not. However, Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor are fucking geniuses, and they go, I want that same reaction that you get when you're sitting in the orchestra seats watching a Broadway show. I want that same feeling to translate via the screen. And they go, how do we make this happen? How does that happen? What has to change in the choreography? How does the timing have to flow? What things can I do for the screen that I would not be able to do on stage, but still get that same effect? Like, what can mm-hmm. we bring in? What are new things we can do? Because those questions are straight up just not being asked anymore. And yeah. like, that's what makes this movie so fucking special. Like, it is just yeah. so well thought out. It was perfect. They really said, like, okay, this isn't a musical for the stage. This is a movie musical. How can we create the same feeling via the screen? And what qualities can we use in the, what movie making qualities can we use to make this resonate with our audiences? Which mm-hmm. is why you choose to do like an animated film over a live action film, because you go, okay, what can exist in this world that can't yeah. exist in live action? And how do we make that resonate with the audience? Like, it's mm-hmm. so beautiful. So I'm just, this is my mini rant. That's like, why can't we just get back to that, people? Why can't we yeah. ask the same questions?
We need to make, like, they did everything that you said, but they also made the singing and the dancing directly linked to their acting.
Yes.
Like, one never existed without the other. Now I feel like even with stage musicals, sometimes there is very much a disconnect between, like, I'm saying my lines, I'm acting, now I'm singing and dancing.
Yes.
I think a lot of modern musicals, and therefore a lot of modern movie musicals, there is a very big disconnect between the acting and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
And in Singin' in the Rain, they're one and the same.
Absolutely.
Like, Gene Kelly is acting his ass off while he's fucking tap dancing.
Exactly. So the word,
you just gotta watch it.
The name of the game, right? So the word to describe Singin' in the Rain is just fluidity. Everything mm-hmm. falls into each other and all comes out in this one perfect, beautiful little bubble. And then it pops yeah. and it's over and you're feeling like, ah, that was incredible. So yep. that was Singin' in the Rain.
Oh, so good. So good. So now we'll move into our second one. Fame. Fame came out in 1980. It was written by Christopher Gore and directed by Alan Parker. Christopher Gore also wrote quite a bit of the music, but he was also helped by some other people, like some members of the cast and some other lyricists, etc. But yeah. I'm similar to Singin' in the Rain. I'm not going to fucking read all their names. So at the New York City High School for the Performing Arts, students get specialized training that often leads to success as actors, singers, etc. This film follows 8 students from the time they audition to get into the school through graduation. Among these are the brazen Coco Hernandez, played by Irene Cara, shy Doris Finsecker. What a last name.
I know, Jesus Christ.
Played by Maureen Teefy, sensitive gay Montgomery McNeil, played by Paul McCrane, and brash, abrasive Ralph Garcy, played by Barry Miller. The teens grapple with heavy issues such as homosexuality, abortion, attempted suicide, and illiteracy. On top of their unique struggles, the students must deal with the mundane pressures of adolescence, like homework, heartbreak, and rejection, all in pursuit of fame.
Fame!
Did you like Fame, Monica? How did you feel about it?
Okay, this was my first time watching Fame. I
had also never seen it.
I had never seen this one nor the universally hated the show? No, like the universally hated
remake
of it that came out in like 2009 or some shit.
Yeah,
so I'd never seen like kind of anything involving Fame. My honest answer is I thought it was good. Like, I thought it was just, like, I thought it was fine. I wouldn't watch it again, though. It's just not something that's, like, necessarily my cup of tea.
Sure.
But it is a very late 1970s, early 1980s musical. Wow. It, like, it perfectly encapsulates the epitome of, like, mm-hmm. the late 1970s, early 1980s musical, period.
Yeah.
In its songs, in its style. It's very, like, overwhelming, which is mm-hmm. kind of, it says a lot about that era in general. Like, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of colors. There's a lot of kids. There's a lot of teeth. It's just a lot. It's very overwhelming.
See, I really, really liked Fame, just as a standalone movie, not even in relation to the other ones. I think it's a really, really well-made film. It got huge acclaim. It's like they decided to make Fame because of how successful A Chorus Line was.
Yeah.
But for the purposes of this discussion, I think Fame was really great because it's a really, really perfect example of the shift that came for movie musicals in the late 70s and 80s. They became a lot less presentational and a lot more rooted in real stories and trying to be musicals, but also trying to be, first and foremost, great films and tell true stories. It's also just like a huge transition of style because we have a lot less of these huge sweeping moments with sets and costumes and dance numbers and way more rooted in truth and like being in the moment and having song come out of feeling rather than song being inserted into it.
Right. It's a, I think this, yes, to your point about songs coming out in feeling, but another mark is songs coming out of everyday life. So versus it being like, okay, like, because the way that a lot of musicals are written is they have like a general outline and then they're like, let's write the songs first and then the dialogue will come out of the songs. That's like a big, a big way that a lot of them are written because you have like the different structures, like the I Want song and like, and kind of like moving on from song to song and being like, this is how we're going to create the story. I feel like the script is written first almost and then they're like, okay, out of this feeling or out of this everyday occurrence, like what song can come out of that? Is this a good moment for a song? Is this like out of this script, like this traumatic thing that happened, like can a song come out of that? Is it too much? Like can we just let it sit with the audience? Like that's one thing that I did like about Fame was I could very much tell that a lot of the songs came out of feeling, even if it wasn't written that way specifically. That's what it felt like, and I think that was the point. They wanted you to be like, these songs are coming out of these kids because things are happening around them and this is how they're reacting to them versus these are the big numbers that we must put into the performance and that we must put into the movie.
They're also, all of the songs, only like three of the songs are actually performed on like as musical. I can't even say that they're musical numbers because they just like happen. Like one of the songs is at the very end because the whole all the students sing a song for graduation. And so like, that's one of the songs. It's not like
We Sing the Body Electric or something.
Yeah. The Body Electric is the name of that song. But then like, the Out Here on My Own, the song that everyone knows from this movie, like, it's not like she just breaks into song. They're writing a song to perform. And so then she performs the song.
Yes.
So it's very different. And I think like, I've seen when I was reading about musicals and movie musicals, they refer to movie musicals during this time as more like music videos, which I totally get. Like Footloose is considered a musical, but there are no musical numbers. Flashdance is considered a musical, but there are no musical numbers because a lot of the songs from this quote unquote musical are just like background music.
Exactly.
So it's very, very different. Still a musical, just like not what we're used to. But then that also kind of made me start thinking and go like, okay, so then like, why are movie musicals still getting so much hate? Like, why are they still not popular? Because you would think that like, if it's not, it's okay. Like we didn't do the big song and dance, like people are saying they don't want anymore. Mm-hmm. We made it way more organic. We coupled it with like incredible filmmaking, incredible acting. You would think all of those things combined would then elevate it because it's like, okay, these people can sing and dance, but there are also these like small musical numbers that are incredible. You would think that would elevate it, but people still fucking don't like musicals. It's very confusing to me.
That's really funny because a lot of people, going back to kind of our discussion about specifically La La Land, a lot of people really fucking loved La La Land, and I genuinely believe that it is. Aaron's like raising his hand like, I loved La La Land. We all liked La La Land. Okay, no one's fucking saying otherwise. We just think it could have been so much better. Sure. with the addition of actual, I don't know, stage actors who have done musicals before, and not Ryan Gosling, aka Handsome Luke, and Emma Stone, aka Girl from Easy A, who lip synced her fucking musical number in even that movie. So it's just like, it's just beyond like, what I think a lot of it has to do with is truly, like, it's just truly, it comes down to the actors. I really do think, I think that that's what it is. Because to your point, a movie like Fame, where it's actually really, truly well made, the songs are way less in your face. The style is a lot grittier. So it's not like, you know, it's not Care Bears, like everyone's jumping around having a good time. It's a lot grittier. It's a lot more real. So it's rooted in like everyday experiences. I think a lot of teenagers could relate to that movie, even if they were not in the arts. And it dealt with a lot of like really intense themes that I think a lot of people would appreciate seeing on screen. For specifically teenagers, very much like what Euphoria is doing now with that show. So it had all of these incredible elements, and still people, I hear on multiple occasions, people making fun of the movie Fame for like being kind of what it is. And, but in the same breath, they're like, La La Land is a masterpiece. So I'm just
it's very confusing.
It's very confusing. Like in the past, in all of quarantine, I have seen multiple TV shows. Please don't hate me. It is the way that it is the way the world works. I have binge watched multiple series of television shows throughout the entirety of quarantine. And I swear to God, they make a joke about Fame multiple times in various TV seasons, specific comedy seasons. Like I remember they made fun of Fame and New Girl for some reason. Like that was a big plot point. And I'm just like, wait, what the fuck? But everyone loves La La Land. Very confusing.
It's so very confusing, especially because like Fame was well reviewed. People liked it. Like it's considered a good movie. And I, people's opinions aside, I do think Fame and movie musicals like Fame were achievements, especially when they like right around the time period that they came out, because musical theater, while everyone loved it, it was also a very highbrow interest because you had to have fucking money to go to the theater.
You have to have money to go to the, okay. Let's just break down the musical in dollars, okay? Just as a consumer, so we're going to look at it as a consumer and then as an art maker. So as a consumer, you need to live in an area that has musicals, that actually produces musicals, which is not every city in America, by the way.
No.
So in terms of accessibility, you're fucked. So let's say you live in New York or Los Angeles or Chicago or San Francisco. Like, let's say you live in like one of these cities or a bunch of like major cities that has touring companies come and do really lovely Broadway productions of musicals that perform really well and like win Tonys and people love. Okay, let's say that happens. The tickets are like $200 in order to get like a decent seat. You have to pay for that. You have to dress well, because if you don't, like, it's considered rude. You have to, although I fully wore pajamas to Wicked, so like no one at me. It was at the Pantages. And you have to, like, there has to be a certain etiquette, and you have to get there on fucking time. It is not in any way like a movie where you can like, you're at the AMC and you can just like waltz in after like 15 minutes. Like it's chill.
Yeah.
Most of the time they won't let you in. So then you just wasted $200. And it's a once in a lifetime experience, because a lot of the times they don't come back to that city, or they don't do a revival for like 10 years, or et cetera, et cetera.
Or it's just a different cast, et cetera. Yeah.
Exactly. So we've got all these factors, and it's very expensive and it's very inaccessible, especially if you have any sort of disability. A lot of them don't accommodate for that. If you're deaf, if you're hard of hearing, if you're blind, like they do not have, or excuse me, very few theaters accommodate for any disability. It's very inaccessible. So like that's just one of the many roadblocks to watching like a solid musical and then leaving with a good experience. So that's on the consumer side. on the art making side. So like as an artist, as a performer, as a choreographer, as a musician, whatever, what have you, you have to get training, which costs money. And then you have to do really well in your training and do really well in school to get into more training. So at the college level, you have to pay for that training, and then you have to pay to keep up with your training, because if you don't, then you fall out of like that rhythm and you don't meet the people that you need to meet in order to like get the opportunities you want. You have to go on all these auditions, which costs money for transportation and clothes and food and all of that. You have to attend the auditions. You have to work your ass off. You have to constantly train, because it is the truth. And then you finally get booked, and then you have to move to New York if you don't live there. If you're on a Broadway show, if you're touring, you have to sign an equity contract and tour and make shit money. And like, it's a grueling process, and it costs an insane amount of money, is the point that I'm trying to make. Do you have anything to add, Jessica?
Well, I was in the middle of a point when you...
that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, do you have anything to add?
It was all to say that like, during this time, movie musicals like Fame are what made musicals lower brow and more attainable, and allowed people to feel not like they could just like access going to see the movie, but like that they were welcome and that the movie was about them as well. Because like this, it's about like some inner city kids and kids who like have family problems and kids who are facing like abuse. And you know, that shit wasn't in musical. That's not in fucking My Fair Lady.
Like, yeah, it's really not. Oh, trust me, we tried watching My Fair Lady. It's not in there. God. It's nowhere to be found. It's nowhere to be found.
It's
in
at
the
least
3 hour
not in the first
film.
Hour, because that's all I watched.
It's nowhere to be found in the 3 hours it takes to finish My Fair Lady.
Exactly. But yeah, it's just it made it way more accessible and made people actually want to buy into the story. So I do think that like the movie is an achievement, regardless of how many fucking jokes Fame gets, because I mean, I can't tell you why it gets so many jokes. I guess it's just become this kind of like symbol of like artists doing their best, because that's like what it's about. It's about kids wanting to be famous. I'm going to publicly apologize to Monica for sassing her about interrupting me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it to be so sassy.
She was trying to be playful, y'all, and it came off as I mean, too I aggressive.
Did, maybe I was... I didn't think it would read as sassy as it came off. I apologize, Monica.
Guys, I'm being abused.
You're being abused. But I mean, but Monica keeps interrupting me with her nose and her thoughts.
With my big nose and my
your big
thoughts.
Nose and your big brain.
Speaking of my brain, one thing that I want to connect about Fame. So as I was watching Fame,
tell me.
I was thinking about, wait for it, the hit TV show on Netflix, the Netflix original television show documentary, Cheer.
Uh-huh. Oh my God. I'm waiting with bated breath about where this point is going.
So
about how this connection happens.
Okay, so the reason why I was thinking about Cheer is because it's kind of in the same wavelength, like kids from... same kind of like inner city kids, or like kids from low income neighborhoods, or mm-hmm. You know, lower socioeconomic statuses, what have you, coming together and working really fucking hard on bettering themselves through an art form. In that case, it was Cheer, and in this case, it was art. So
okay, that's a connection. I see it.
And so the reason why I was saying, like, to your point, Jessica, about like this movie making it slightly more accessible to other audiences because it's more relatable and it's less like highbrow. Mm-hmm. In that way, like, I was just thinking about Cheer kind of doing the same thing. Like, not a lot of people, actually the majority of people, know nothing about cheerleading / hate it /
exactly,
or have
yeah.
no interest in it, like me, like myself. But then they watch Cheer and they're incredibly invested because it tells it through the lens of students who are struggling and put all of their self-worth into their craft, which is not the healthiest, but it is also a way to cope, and I respect that.
Sure.
So,
maybe if they made Fame as a documentary, people would fucking like it.
They did.
Or
it was
respect it.
They did. It was called, I think it was also called Fame.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding. There was a documentary that used to be on Netflix. It's no longer on Netflix. Where they followed like six different Loxa kids, which, by the way, if you guys don't know, Loxa is the LA County High School for the Performing Art or for the Arts, not performing. This OP. It's not Loxa. It's
Loxa.
So
go to Loxa.
That is a school in the inner city that is like, it's in downtown Los Angeles. It's like very, you have to audition to get in. It's exactly the Fame school but in Los Angeles. Yeah. And there is probably like no stairs like the ones in New York. I think it's just all flat and like bungalows. I don't know, I've never been there, but the point, actually, have I? I think I was there for like a Shakespeare festival once upon a time.
Because you're an actor.
D-task. One thing that I will say is they did do a like Fame style documentary about like these kids from Loxa who like are in the different disciplines. Like one of them was like an Asian ballerina. And then the other one was like literally she was dead ass. What's her face? Doris Finsecker. That's who she was, basically. That was her character.
Maybe the moral of the story is that people don't have any fucking respect for artists.
I think that's the moral. I think, guys, in like this almost hour you've been listening to us, I truly think that that's just what we've been trying to say all along, is no one gives a shit about artists.
No one respects artists.
Pay them. Why don't you pay them,
please?
Let them do art. I don't know. Stop casting Justin Bieber in everything. Or no, it's not him. Who is it?
Justin Bieber doesn't get cast in anything.
No, it's someone who gets cast in everything.
Timothy Chalamet, who he did go to the school that the Fame school is based off of.
I know. Isn't that just bizarre?
Yeah.
Also, he just hosted Saturday Night Live, and I'm unimpressed. Sorry.
I mean, I do like Timothy Chalamet.
I'm sorry for Timothy Chalastans or whatever you call yourselves, but I'm unimpressed by the Tim.
Well,
that may just be because he plays the same character in every film, so I haven't given him a chance. But I'm not a Chalastan.
This episode is now about shitting on Timothy Chalamet.
Boy King, je suis Boy King Timothy Chalamet.
Oh my God. Oh boy.
So that was Fame.
That was Fame.
Is there anything else on Fame?
No, I do think it's funny though, because all of the people in Fame went on to do pretty much nothing.
Except for the woman who played Coco Hernandez. She's
Irene
like
Cara.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah. She's a songwriter, and she's famous. But everyone else like was in like one or two other movies, and now they're either like aren't really acting anymore, or they're acting in like tiny TV
Hallmark
shit
movies. I don't know.
Which is funny because Monica and I were talking about this. There were some big fucking actors who auditioned to be in Fame who got turned down, like Michelle Pfeiffer and Patrick Swayze and Madonna. And then the Fame kids weren't famous.
Which is just, I think Fame is a cursed movie in that way, where it's like, if you're in it, you're never going to be famous.
The most famous person in the movie is Anne Meara, who plays the lit teacher. And she's Ben Stiller's mom in real
life. I know, which I didn't know until Jessica had told me after I had watched Fame. She was like, that's Ben Stiller's mom. And I was like, oh my God, her son's the night guard from Night at the Museum.
Yeah, and she plays Steve's mom in Sex and the City.
I know, that I did know. That I was like, oh my God, wait, yes, it's Ben Stiller's mom. Mother of the current night guard at the Natural History Museum. We stan.
Yes.
Where, by the way, if you don't know, the exhibits come to life at night. Nick at Night, but for exhibits.
What?
All right, guys. I just need to mentally prepare you for this next film because
this is the best. I mean, Singing in the Rain is the technically best movie out of all of these, but this is the party.
This is like, okay, so Jessica and I reference this movie probably too many times. And I think it's really annoying at this point, but we can't change your personalities. Like, sue us. I'm sorry. I mean,
this movie is my personality. So
this movie saved my life on multiple occasions. I just say that in terms of like I was sick and then I felt better afterwards. Or like I was normal and then I watched Mamma Mia and I couldn't stop singing ABBA songs and so therefore I was happier. So that's what I mean by that. I don't mean like it got me out of a low point in my life.
You weren't like just about to jump off of a balcony and then
Lay All
you
Your Love
Mama
on Me
Mia.
Was like playing in the background and I was like, nah, fam, I'm not doing this. Oh, I'm gonna goodness. Watch Amanda Seyfried like lay in the sand and it's all gonna be better. That's not what I mean. What I do mean, and with the movie that we're talking about is Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia.
Not Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, but Mamma Mia.
No, the first OG. One. Just Mamma Mia exclamation point.
So Mamma Mia exclamation point came out in 2008, written by Katherine Johnson, woot woot, directed by Phyllida Lloyd, based on the songs of ABBA. Woo! With Woo-hoo. Additional music and lyrics by Benny Anderson. That's with two S's.
A member of ABBA.
A member of ABBA. Well, you ruined my joke. I was like, that's with two S's because he's Swedish.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And a member of ABBA.
I'm sorry.
And fun fact about ABBA, they all wear crazy costumes for tax write-offs. So, like, that's the vibe that we're going for here.
We stand.
Okay, so Sophie Sheridan, played by Amanda Seyfried. I'm going to say Seyfried. A lot of people say Seyfried, but there's an I, so I'm just...
I don't know. I don't even know if it's Seyfried. Is it Seyfried?
It's Sy. Okay. I'm just going to go ahead and say Amanda Seyfried. Seyfried.
Okay.
Okay. Amanda Seyfried is 20 years old and lives with her mother, Donna Sheridan, played by Meryl Streep, on an idyllic Greek island, the Mamma Mia Island. She is about to be married to her fiancé, Sky, played by a yummy Dominic Cooper.
Yum. They were also in a relationship.
Yeah, like straight up. Like straight up, they were fucking. And wishes for only one thing, that her one true daddy, father, walk her down the aisle and give her away. Yay. Aww. The only problem is that her mother's a fucking tramp and she doesn't know who her father is. And her mother won't discuss it with her. After she finds her mom's diary from the year she was born, she discovers her father could be one of three men. Bill Anderson, played by the delectable Stellan Skarsgård. I think he's the biggest Skarsgård. If I'm not mistaken,
he's the father of all the other Skarsgårds.
He is the largest Skarsgård in the Skarsgård family tree. Harry Bright, played by our lovely Colin Firth. We love him.
Oh, we love him.
Or Sam Carmichael, played by Pierce fucking Brosnan. So she invites all three of the daddies to her wedding. And Sophie is convinced that she will know her father as soon as she sees him, but soon realizes, duh, it's far more complicated than she imagined. That
yes,
is Mamma
Sophie,
Mia.
It is.
Wow.
Where do I begin with what I love about Mamma Mia? You know, it's ABBA, my favorite band.
It's
Meryl Streep, my favorite actor.
Yes, exactly. She's the actress of all actresses.
It's Greece.
We love Greece.
A beautiful country.
Fun fact, Jessica adores ABBA with a burning passion. She had an ABBA-themed birthday party at one point. It was very lovely.
It was so good. Y'all wish you were invited.
Y'all wish you was there. Y'all wish. And the music is obviously incredible. So, like, let's take the music out of the mix really quick.
Sure.
The amount of talent in this movie is indescribable. All of the big daddies are in this movie. All of them. And even unnamed ones. Like, people that we didn't even fucking name in the description. Like, what's her face? And then what's also her face? Those two. The two friends. Of Donna and the Dynamos.
Christine Baranski and Julie Walters, is that her name?
Sure.
She plays Ron's mom in the Harry Potter series. In terms of movie musicals and in comparison to the other two that we talked about. I think that this musical, I mean, we chose it because we fucking love it, but we also chose it because it's a really good example of what the movie musical has become now. It's either like a decent film that was made purely for fun, starring big stars, which is what this is.
Big stars.
Because this movie is technically good in a lot of ways. Like, it's really beautifully shot. They shot it on location in Croatia.
Like it's fucking beautiful.
It's shot on film. Like, and there are some huge, huge actors in this, Oscar winners in this fucking movie. Or a movie musical is fucking awful, and they put random C or D list celebrities in it to get views. So it makes me really sad that that is what the movie musical has become. And like, that's the kind of disrespect, honestly, that musicals get, because I think they're such an impressive art form.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that they're disrespected by Hollywood, because that's not like, I love Mamma Mia, the movie, but if the musical was respected, Mamma Mia, the movie would have been a way bigger deal. It have been starring Broadway stars and not Meryl Streep and fucking Pierce Brosnan and making Colin Firth sing. Like,
which is, you know,
I love this movie. I love that they're all in it. But if the world treated the musical better, it would have been a much bigger deal. Yeah. And taken more seriously.
It would have been like Patti LuPone and like, someone younger. Like,
Jeremy Jordan plays Sky.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fucking Aaron, like, Tveit. I don't know. Norbert Leo Butts plays like one of the dads.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh,
you know?
Brian D'Arcy James plays one of the dads.
Exactly. Like these huge people, they would have been in it. But no, it gets fucking disrespect. And so this is what we get.
Disrespected like that. Not to say that we don't fucking love the current cast, because I just think it's like so beautiful and so perfect.
I love it. Like, I love that it's a party, but it's a party because Hollywood doesn't respect musicals.
Exactly. Because it really could have been that good, because y'all can't sit there and tell me that the songs aren't delectable. They are big time ABBA hits in Hollywood. Okay.
I once briefly dated a musician who told me, he was like, I love disco music, but ABBA is one of the worst bands ever. And I was like, we can't date.
And y'all broke up, right?
And then we didn't date anymore.
Wow. That's
because,
commitment.
Well, I mean, it simply comes down to the fact that I love ABBA and I listen to ABBA all the time, and thus it's not going to work. You know what I mean? But I do think that Mamma Mia could have been something far more respected. But now it's just like, oh, these like huge actors, they did something for fun. Like, they got to have a good time.
Like that meme with Colin Firth when he's like, he's like, what do you want God to tell you when you reach to the pearly gates of the heavens above? I was going to say hell, but that wasn't the thing. Well, what did he say? He said, I'd like him to say, you were quite good in Mamma Mia.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what, Colin? You were quite good in Mamma Mia.
He was quite good. Did he sing?
Harry Bright is a hilarious character. He sang that one verse in Our Last Summer.
Yes.
Remember?
Our Last Summer.
I can still recall Our Last Summer.
And you know what? He sounded exactly like that.
That's my Colin Firth impression, and I think it's a pretty good one.
I agree. And it's like very heavily auto-tuned, and he's like trying his fucking best. They're all very auto-tuned, especially Pierce is so auto-tuned.
You know, I am gonna give you a hot take about Mamma Mia / ABBA though.
Go ahead.
My favorite version of SOS is the one from the movie.
What? Oh my god, I would have never guessed that.
Something about it. Pierce Brosnan is not a great singer, but something about Pierce and Meryl duetting on this will they, won't they number. It really gets me. I love that version.
Oh my freaking god. For me, this is a very unpopular opinion, because I actually really fucking adore the song. Gimme, come
so,
gimme,
it's so good.
I fucking love that song. And I actually really love the movie version of that song for whatever reason. I just think it's a bigger deal. Like, I think it's just a bigger party because more, honestly, the reason being is,
I mean,
more
people literally takes place at a party. Yeah,
exactly. More people are singing it. It's just more upbeat that way. Like the new mix is like very like disco party versus like the original song. So I tend to play that one more. I don't know that I like that one better because I do still jam out to the OG baby.
To the OG. Yeah.
But I do play that one more is my little factoid about myself.
Okay. I accept that. I mean, you accepted me saying that a Pierce Brosnan song is one of my faves. Yeah, so.
Very confusing, honestly, but I'll take it. Like, it kind of like leads me to question your sanity a little bit, but you know what? I'll take it.
I am who I am.
I am.
Love me or hate me.
Oh my God. Whenever anyone says I am who I am, all I can think about is the shirt. So like in Cheaper by the Dozen 2, which no one saw.
Oh girl, I did.
Steve Martin wears this shirt when he goes out to the tennis scene where he plays tennis with Eugene Levy and his wife, who the younger wife, and they go out to the fucking tennis court and he's wearing a t-shirt that says I am who I am with a picture of a yam, and like that's all I can think about when I hear someone say I am who I am. So that's,
I am who I am.
I am who I am.
Wow, I love that. Okay, but anyway, Mamma Mia. I think one of the things I like most about this movie is that all of these fucking actors are just so happy to be there.
Oh yeah.
I think that's why it's so enjoyable rather than like makes me sad about movie musicals.
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
Because everyone is so on board and they loved doing it so much that they did a second one. And all of the cast members have said that they would do as many Mamma Mia movies people want.
Exactly. And I have to say, like, you as the audience member, you can tell when in a film if the cast is having fun or not. Like, you can tell that immediately. Whether or not you are actively attuned to it or like subliminally attuned to it, you can still tell whether or not the cast is having fun. And in this movie, in Mamma Mia, you can 1000% without a shadow of a doubt know that this cast is having the time of their fucking lives. Like, they are enjoying themselves so much. So you, as the audience member, enjoy yourself even more. And it is just such an incredible film. Like, you can watch it at any girls' night and it is like the perfect fucking movie. It sets the mood. It gets you up off your feet. Like, you want to dance along. It is a movie where you very shamelessly sing along to the songs because they're just that good. They're incredible ABBA classics. And you just like get up and dance because the energy that these actors exude is like fucking off the charts. Like, it is so incredible. And obviously, like, to Jessica's point, because this movie wasn't taken seriously, it produces like very much like party musical where everyone is just like bouncing around, like not giving a shit, like having a good time. But we'll take it. Like, I will take that.
Like, I think with the exception of La La Land, Mamma Mia really is the best case scenario for a movie musical right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, for it to be well made, for the actors in it to be good actors who are really game for a good time. Because, like, I really think people are wasting their fucking time and money making, like, Hairspray, the TV musical, or Sound of Music, the TV musical, honestly, starring Carrie Underwood as Maria.
Oh my God, get the fuck out,
like,
of my life.
It's fucking insulting, and it's also, like, a last-ditch attempt to, like, resurrect the career of a boring star.
Not only that, but they're also wasting their time and money remaking these Disney classics that are musicals. Like, these Disney, keyword, animated classics into live-action films that are musicals, and they fucking suck. Like, I implore all of you to go home, unless you're home already. You should be home. To be at home. Grab your phone when this podcast is over. Listen to this whole fucking thing. I will know if you don't. And go over to the live-action Beauty and the Beast soundtrack click on bell, which is like the first like big number, and listen to Emma Watson fucking butcher that goddamn riff at the end, where she, or in the beginning of the first like verse, where she's like, little town, it's a quiet village, da 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 da, little town full of little people. Like, it's so obvious that it is so auto-tuned, and I want to kill myself because they don't get singers. They get fucking ex-Hermione's and put them in a yellow dress and call it a musical. It's not, honey.
The thing is that musical theater actors have even said, like, I was reading an article about it when Beauty and the Beast came out, and or no, when La La Land came out, sorry, that they were like, just get real fucking singers. But then the studios are like, well, they're not known names and they can't act. Okay, so let's go back to how it used to fucking be and how they do it for Disney musicals, and just take a musical theater actor's voice and dub it in over the star's face. Yes! And the musical theater actors were like, yeah, sure, fine, you're right, I'm not a film actor, just use me for the talent I have and pay me for it, and we can work together here.
Who were the voices in all of your who were the singing voices, sorry, in all of your favorite Disney animated classics? Hercules, Roger fucking Bart, bitch. Roger Bart Young Frankenstein? The youngest Frankenstein. That's what he was.
I think Donny Osmond was the singing voice of Shang in Mulan, but he wasn't the speaking voice for him.
Salonga. Leah Salonga was Mulan's voice. Mandy Moore was fucking what's her face Tangled.
Well, yeah, but she was also the acting voice as
yeah,
well.
So she's not a good example, but like, you know what I mean.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Like, oh, we have done this before, but now people are like, no, let's just instead have Emma Watson sing really poorly. That's a great idea.
Let's have Ryan Gosling, like, let's give him a falsetto even though he doesn't have one. let's have him sing in his head voice even though he doesn't really know how to achieve that, and it comes out as like a squeak. let's do that.
Yeah. We just have a lot of really strong feelings about getting musicals to be at a standard that they were before, because I don't, like, honestly, producing movie musicals like this, to continue to do it, is not helping people like musicals more.
It's helping people hate them even more.
It's giving them more reasons to fucking hate
them.
I'm
sorry. Did we ask for the Grinch live? No. Did we ask? So, like, you know how we've been sitting here on our high horse kind of like talking about, like, put Broadway actors in musicals. Don't put Matthew Morrison in anything.
Yeah, take him out. Did you hear that he was like, I based my performance off of Joaquin Phoenix and the Joker?
Which is just so...
And then someone did a side-by-side video of the, like, the dance down the stairs, and they were just like, oh, he 100% did actually take his acting notes from fucking Joker. Oh my god.
Moral of the story is, do not put Matthew Morrison in anything. That was a bad choice. Why the fuck would you even consider doing that? I understand that you need a new Fox Live, because if you don't have one, you'll die, Fox. I get that. I understand. But, like, why the fuck would you put Matthew Morrison in anything? Haven't you seen Glee?
Him and his ramen hair? Like, let's just not.
Him and his hair and his, like, inability to do anything except look, like, longingly at people. Like, oh my god. And like, just don't put him in anything. I'm dead. Like, this is why people hate. So again, we've been making this argument, like, put Broadway actors or stage actors in these musicals, but then they go ahead and put Matthew Morrison, who is, by the way, a stage actor, in a movie musical that's not really a movie musical. It's just a musical that's live,
that filmed
kind of like a movie and televised. But that doesn't work. And you want to know why that doesn't work? Because it's Matthew fucking Morrison.
So this episode is actually about two things. It's about making better movie musicals and never hiring Matthew Morrison again.
Stop. Those are the two things that this Matthew is about. Morrison.
If you remake Singin' in the Rain and you hire Matthew Morrison, I will personally burn down Fox.
He was the worst part of What to Expect When You're Expecting, starring Cameron Diaz, Elizabeth Banks, J-Lo, and like 50 other stars. He was the worst part in that. So if he can ruin a movie like What to Expect When You're Expecting, then you know you shouldn't put him in anything.
Exactly. I have one last question to round out our discussion of Mamma Mia.
Yes, please.
Okay, Monica, if you were to be in Mamma Mia, who do you think you would get cast as?
Oh my God. I would get cast as what's her face? Glasses.
Like say short, who you would want. Spike. Say who you would want to be versus who you would realistically get cast as.
I would get cast as Rosie. 100%.
See, I think you would get cast as Sophie. I think you could easily get cast as Sophie.
Really?
Yes. Maybe.
Lay all your love on me. That was my audition. I would get cast as Rosie or Tanya. Like for real. Like for real, for real. Like honestly, if I were to truly go into like a cast, one of those castings and like
an audition, you said
an audition, I truly believe that they would cast me as either Rosie or Tanya, like without a doubt.
I think if we were doing a version of, the second movie, you would get cast as young Rosie.
Yeah. Young Rosie or young Tanya. Either one, like truly either one. Okay. But I am no Lily Collins. Not who I am.
See, I just think I would be Tanya. I would want to be Tanya and only be cast as Tanya.
I disagree. I think you would be cast as Donna.
That's very kind of you. I don't have her range.
Neither does Meryl Streep, but there she is.
I mean, fair, but she sang The Winner Takes It All in one take. So,
the winner takes it all.
The bitch flew to Sweden to record in Benny Andersson's studio and sang this motherfucking song in one take. Like,
she's a queen bee.
If she was nominated for an Oscar for playing the fucking witch in the Into the
Which
Woods
is
movie,
garbage.
Why? Wasn't she nominated for playing Donna in it's because nobody respects musicals and nobody respects ABBA is what is actually what
also,
this is all about.
Why would you cast James Corden in anything? Same deal as Matthew Morrison.
I'm so insulted you didn't respond to my text the other day where I said I'm watching The Prom and I think I hate James Corden.
Because you want to know why? Because I had nothing to say to that other than yes.
I had never really formed an opinion about him, but while watching that movie, I was just like, no.
I had formed my opinion about him when I went to go see Into the Woods as a youngster in the movie theater. I went to go see it at the Pacific Theaters. I didn't pay for a ticket. Cops don't at me. I just snuck in with my friends, and it was fucking terrible. And the only reason why it was terrible was legitimately because of James Corden.
Yeah, I mean, that movie was too Disney-fied. They needed the second act. Like, the Woods is nothing without its second act, personally.
Exactly. Why would you only do Into the Woods Jr.? Why
because
would you
it's Disney. Why did Steven Sondheim let that happen is my question.
I don't know. He just did it for the money. He wants to keep his brownstone.
He's old. He's old. I get it. He needed money.
We get it. He doesn't give a shit. The point
but
is,
anyway.
I would probably be cast as Rosie or Tanya. I would want to be my goal would be to be cast as Sam, and I wouldn't be cast as Sam. Or Bill or Harry. Like, I think I would rock the shit out of any of the dads, to be honest.
Yeah,
with
I think you would be great at being one of the dads.
But unfortunately, I don't think that they would cast me as any of them.
It's okay. It happens.
Yeah, so I, like, humbly speaking, I truly think that you would be cast as Donna. I think you would want to be cast as Tanya or Rosie.
Tanya.
But I truly think, like, I think from the bottom of my heart, you'd be cast as Donna. You have that energy.
So you're saying that we're going to do a production of Mamma Mia.
So for everyone listening out there, we're going to be doing a production of Mamma Mia. Come listen to it. It'll be radio only. So we'll get the rights. Don't worry, baby. Don't worry.
An audio musical. They need to do, maybe that's our next podcasting endeavor.
Oh yeah, we do like an audio musical for sure.
Yeah, I love it.
So that was Mamma Mia.
Well, that was
the winner takes it all. SOS, Fernando, all of them. They're all in there.
Fernando's in the second movie.
Sorry.
Excuse you.
In the universe, I guess. They do all the songs. They even do Waterloo in the second movie. They do it all.
They do Waterloo in the first movie in the credits.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. They like actually do Waterloo in the second movie.
I know.
In the bar.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Mamma Mia.
Anyway. Though. And that was our musical episode. We've been wanting to, or we've been talking about doing one for a while. And so I guess we worked out with Monica's birthday.
Movie musicals. Anyway, Jessica, what have you been dabbling in?
What have I been dabbling in? Well, I've been staying at home, so nothing.
So interesting. This is exactly what our listeners want to hear.
I made really, really, really good cookies last week.
Ugh, like, I hate you.
Like, crazy good. Also from Claire Savitz's cookbook, but not a horrible recipe like the brownie one was.
So, I'm gonna answer the question for her, Jessica. She's been dabbling in Dessert Person, which is Claire Savitz's new cookbook. Really, it's less of a cookbook and more of like a baking book.
Yeah.
Whatever. It made the New York Times bestseller list. I think it's like at number 3 right now. So shout out Claire, our close personal friend, Claire Savitz.
Our close friend, Claire Savitz.
But she's been doing that. So
yeah, I've been cooking, baking out of that book because I'm considering, and I mean, I should probably decide because Christmas, when we're recording this, Christmas is in 6 days. And I wanted to send cookies to my family. And I haven't made any yet. So I should probably do it if I'm going to. We'll see.
Amazing.
What have you been dabbling in?
I have recently been dabbling in aprons. So I was searching the entire, scouring the internet for like a cool apron. And I wanted, so like we used to watch Bon Appetit. We don't watch it anymore. They're racist. So we don't watch them. But when I used to watch Bon Appetit.
On that same note, apparently Claire Savitz is like, was 100% just like standing by watching it all happen and not doing shit. But I bought her book. Yeah. So
I believe it. I believe that all the white people were just like complacent. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything about that because like I don't know them, but I fully believe they were all just like standing around like letting it all happen. It's fine.
Yeah. Just being like, what are we gonna do?
When I say it's fine, I don't actually mean it's fine. I just mean like whatever, like we'll get over it. It is what it is. They're still making money, we're still not. It is what it is. So I've been looking for different aprons. When I used to watch Bon Appetit, I really always admired Molly Baz's aprons.
The pretty smock ones.
Yeah, so she like wore so many like beautiful like clay colored like smock aprons, and they were always like so pretty and nice. And so like I found one. I wanted one that wasn't like really ridiculously expensive, or like too cheap to the point where like it was like see through or something, and like wouldn't protect my clothes. I found one on Amazon that was on the photo was really cute, and then when it came in the mail, it was like really big, and I was like, I'm confused. This is supposed to be for like Asian children. I don't know why it doesn't fit me. It's like literally a child's apron. I'm 5'2", by the way. So like the fact that it doesn't fit me is actually depressing me, but it's just a little big. And I think that I'm just going to take it to the tailor because it's literally just a piece of like nice linen. So at the very least, I know it's like a quality piece of fabric, but like I'm mad. And I sent Jessica a video of me cooking in it, and I looked back at the clips, and I look like I'm wearing a giant sack.
No, you look like you're wearing an apron.
We stand.
I have a Hedley and Bennett apron that Sean got me for my birthday. It's my prized possession. I love it.
How much was the apron?
I think it was like $100.
See, I wasn't about to do that. I paid $20,
but it was a gift, so.
Yeah, but you definitely
pay $100.
Okay, yes, but you definitely went, this is what I want for my birthday, get it for me. And he definitely
went,
I
didn't.
Okay.
No, that is not how it went. I'm going to tell you. because we cook together every single night practically. And I would always spill things on myself and he'd be like, how do you not own an apron? Like, you have all this cooking shit and you cook all the time. How do you not own an apron? And I was like, I don't know. I just don't. And so for my birthday, he asked me, he goes, if I were to, are you someone who prefers to be surprised for your birthday? Or do you want to like, do you want to know what you're getting so that you can pick it out?
Right.
And I was like, if it's expensive, ask me first. If it's not, surprise me.
Okay.
And he was like, well, I want to get you an apron, but I want to get you a really nice one. So I'm going to tell you.
Oh.
So you pick out which nice apron you want. And I said, okay. And I picked a Hedley and Bennett
okay,
one.
So shut the fuck up, bitch. You did go, this is the one that I want. Buy it.
Yeah, but he was like, here are the three that are the nicest, like most like well-reviewed, like chefs wear them, whatever. Pick which one you want. And so that's the one I picked. I did not pick the most expensive one I could have chosen.
Oh yeah. Dude, so, there were some aprons that went for like $500 and I was like, wow.
They're fucking expensive.
Like, wow. Is this Gucci? I'm surprised. Is there gonna be like Gucci? The Gucci pattern? Is this Versace?
Okay, I lied. I do want a Gucci apron now.
Now I do. Now I wanna be bougie and baking.
Okay, Monica, we have a question this week.
Oh,
sorry.
Who?
Did you have something else to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that was kind of it. Stay tuned about my apron. Maybe I'll post a picture. We'll see.
Please do. Please do on your Monica Monday.
On my
the
Monica
one day
Monday.
You get control of Instagram. I'll change the password every Monday just so you can go in.
I'm going to kill myself.
Okay. So our question this week, it's from our listener. Her name is Emily May. And the question is, I would like to hear both of your favorite skincare products, please, because I know nothing.
Wow. I'm so...
A lot of you have been asking me about my skincare.
No, for clarification, no one has asked us about our skincare.
No one. I mean, Emily May just did.
That's true. So,
Monica,
your
what's your favorite skincare product? Or products, I guess.
Well, my favorite skincare product is a good cleanser because if my face doesn't feel clean, I cannot function in the world. And for me, so Jessica and I are very different. I don't wear makeup on a daily basis. I wear it maybe, and we're talking like maybe once a month. So there's nothing for me to clean off of my face that's not just my face.
Like dirt and oil.
Yeah, just dirt and oil and like sebum and all of that gross stuff. So I use the Grown Alchemist Gentle Gel Facial Cleanser.
We love
Grown
Alchemist.
It's kind of expensive. So it's not CeraVe, which is what I used to use, which is like $8 or some shit. Like I used to pick it up at Target all the time until I went to go get a facial and my facialist was like, you're a fucking dumb baby bitch. Like, why don't you just buy normal people's skincare? And I was like, okay, sure. And so I was looking into like kind of like clean skincare and Grown Alchemist is like a really nice brand. And it's like a really nice, it smells really lovely, but it doesn't have any fragrance in it. The smell is kind of just coming from the ingredients, which is really nice. I'm very sensitive to fragrance. So if my skincare has any fragrance in it, I can't survive. I break out in like hives. It's not fun.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, no, it really is. So like my moisturizer smells like nothing. My like exfoliant is just like a chemical exfoliant that smells like nothing. My serum smell like nothing. So this is where I'm at in life.
So you smell like nothing.
So I actually smell like the Glossier perfume, which is just me, but better.
So do I, because that's the perfume I use.
Anyway, Jessica, what is your favorite skincare product?
I mean, I have a whole fucking routine, man.
No. You have to pick the one. I picked one. I have
know.
A whole routine, too. And I just picked one. So fuck you and just pick one.
I think... right now, my favorite skincare product is also my cleanser. I switched to using an oil cleanser recently, and I even sent Monica a how-to video on it.
I know. It was so fucking funny because it was so late at night. I was definitely asleep. For those of you who don't know, again, to quote Jessica, why the fuck would you know? I go to bed at like 10 p.m. That is not a joke.
Yeah,
the reason being is it takes me so long to fall asleep. So I have to go to bed at like 10 and I don't touch my phone.
Yeah, I sent her a video at like 12:30 like of midnight. Me washing like, my face was... because she was like, I don't understand how oil cleansing works. And I was like, oh, I'll show you. So I shot a video for her. It's from a company called One Love Organics, and it's like an enzyme oil cleanser. And I was just like reading about how oil cleansers are really, really good for helping your moisture barrier on your face stay nice and healthy. And my skin gets really dry, especially in winter. And so I switched, and I really, really like it. I think my skin is still adjusting a little bit to it, but it always feels so soft.
You stand.
And I think I look more like luminous naturally than I did before. Like before I had really dull skin and I would have to, you know, like use really like emollient like moisturizer and stuff in order to get any kind of like glow.
Right.
So, yeah.
And you use it to like take off your makeup too, right? Because you wear that.
Yeah, so it melts all of it off and then you wash it off with water, or you can like wipe it off with a cotton round or like a towel or something. Right. I just use water for it, but yeah.
To make all of y'all feel better, I only started using quote unquote real skincare, because I think skincare is just the same all around. It's just all like watery products you put on your face to make yourself not look terrible. I only started using
some esthetician is gonna hear this and be like, no it's not, it's more than that,
it's everything, it is life. I used to use like literally CeraVe and like the one like Cetaphil moisturizer, and like that was my routine. I literally washed my face and then
that does work for plenty of people.
No, like, totally. And I think that it worked for me until I was told it wasn't working for me. So I was like, fine, or at least I thought I was, as I was like walking around the earth thinking I was fine until someone stopped me and was like, no, bitch, you're not fine. You're terrible. So that's kind of where I'm at. But to all of my peeps that use CeraVe, I used to be you, and I would happily go back to being you just to save my bank account some grace. So we're all the same here is what I'm trying to say.
Also, some of you haven't rated and reviewed us on iTunes specifically. I don't care. I don't give a shit if you listen to this on Spotify. Pop up to iTunes real fast. Please leave us a rating. Please write us a nice little review. It really, really helps.
Honestly,
get listeners.
We can, if you DM us, we'll write a review for you and you can copy paste it into the thing.
But it has to come from different accounts, Monica. Yeah.
That's what I mean. They'll it's like
we'll
DM
write
us.
It. They'll do it. Yeah. Okay.
I'll
okay,
write. Yeah. And I'll say, this is the best podcast to ever exist on the planet. 5 stars. And then you can go ahead and copy paste that into your own review. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to do it. It's like copying homework, but better.
So also, we just want to let you guys know that we're taking a little break. I don't want to say break. Hiatus. That seems too official. It seems like we're like going away.
We're not. We're still going to be
it's
here.
It's the holidays. We're going to take ourselves. A little break. take a little relax.
Some R&R, some TLC, Tender Love, and the other one.
Exactly. And we'll be back with a new episode in 2021 on January 12th.
It's going to be a special one. It's new year, new episode. And
And also look out for some new visuals.
Look out for our new Luke. Look out for new clothes. Look out for the new vibes.
The pod is getting a facelift. So.
But you'd never be able to tell because she went to Dr. Diamond. But that's it. So that was this episode. And we will see you on another Tuesday. On another Tuesday at midnight. That's when we drop.
Hopefully we hope to be back in the same room recording soon. So we'll see. As always,
don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Great.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Oh, I'm never doing this again.